Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another Helping Friendly podcast, Quick Hit. This is a quick hit from night two at the Verizon Theater, Grand Prairie in Grand Prairie, Texas. We're here with Matt Burnham, a.k.a. The Real Burnham from Twitter. And, of course, RJ's here with us, too. Matt, how was the show last night?
Well, I think anyone who's listened to it will say that the show had an interesting set up. The first set on a whole, I thought, was very strong, continuing the string of strong first sets this tour. And then the second set didn't quite go the way that a lot of people were probably hoping it would. But I think that there's positives that we can take out of this. I try to be a very positive person. I think that there's stuff that is good in the second set, but I think that it'll go down as a not good second set in general.
Well, you know, you could say that continuing the trend of good first sets, they decided to give you another one.
Yes. I mean, I think the second set would have been a bad first set, too, though.
Oh, okay. Fair. That's fair. Keeping with the positive, if we can, but certainly being honest with ourselves, let's take a look at that first set. So I'm going to start by saying I was really excited to see that they could play Daniel Saw the Stone again. Even if it's just once a tour, let's keep playing it. Maybe I'll get to see it again. Let's talk about some highlights.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously Daniel Saw the Stone is a great opener, as you just alluded to. Kind of gets everyone just jumping really, really quickly, which, you know, I think for an opener, a short little fast number is a great thing to get the crowd moving. From there, they went into Mama Dance and Chalk Dust Torture. Were pretty standard first set numbers. They stayed within their bounds pretty good, but again, high energy, everything was rolling pretty good there. What I thought was actually, there was a couple of different three strong sections in the first set that I thought were really, really awesome. And the first one was the Cities Foam Waking Up Dead.
Yeah.
So the Cities, it was a pretty standard Cities, but there seemed to be a little bit more. I thought everything felt last night really precise. And I'll talk about that more in the second set, that, you know, they didn't get outside their boundaries too much. But it was played with a precision that I don't think is always there. And sometimes that's good. That can show the band's locked in and the band is, you know, on the same page.
Yeah.
And then from there, I mean, obviously there was the phone bust out, which I think broke Twitter for a couple people last night. And that was, again, I thought it was played perfectly for a song that hasn't been played in about 70 shows. That's, you know, about the best you can hope for.
I agree with that.
And, you know, I've heard Trey and the rest of the guys in the band, you know, have their little flubs and foam throughout the years. And it just sounded to me, at least in the moment, I haven't listened back yet, to be really, really on point. And then what was probably maybe the highlight of the show was Waking Up Dead, which had this great just breakdown in the second half of the song. First big boat song from the show. And I think it shows that song has some deep potential, possibly even as a second set number eventually, moving it into, you know, a little bit longer of a jam phase.
Yeah, I think that the breakdown was really good. I think there are legs there. Someday maybe they'll take them walking.
Yeah. After that was by the Grand Prairie last year. And, you know, the Divided Sky is the Divided Sky. It's great. The venue in Grand Prairie, the Verizon Theater, is pretty small. It's a pretty small theater. I think it only holds about 6,000 people, but I would say there's probably only about 4,000 to 5,000 people there last night. But the acoustics are all perfectly. So, like, when, you know, they're doing, like, the pause in Divided Sky, it resonates and everyone screams and everyone can see the band perfectly. There's no bad seat in the house, which is kind of cool as opposed to when you're in, like, you know, back lawn and you can't, you know, like, from last year's and this year's, like, when, you know, they're in the pause and they're doing all the builds for Divided Sky, it feels like you're, like, really in a moment, which is really kind of cool. After that came I Didn't Know, which again, they played last year as well with the, same banter that we did last year about being a Texan from Fort Worth, but everyone and Texas loves to hear the word Texas, so people love that. And then the last three songs in the first set, too, I thought were extremely strong. The Walk Away was rocking out cover, and I thought that was actually might be the set closer. I thought they were going to take it out a little bit, a couple minutes longer, and, you know, kind of wrap it up. But then they decided to go back into What's the Use, which has been played a lot this year. But yeah. I don't think that there's really any reason for it not to be. It's one of my favorite songs. And then the closer More, which I think is a perfect set one closer. And just, you know, gets the whole crowd screaming out the lyrics at the top of their lungs for a song that just debuted this tour. I think everyone's really, really feeling that one.
Yeah, it's a great set closer. I haven't witnessed it personally, but we predicted it back when we did our show on the album itself. Came right out and said that I could see this being a huge closer, set closer for people, and glad to see that they're doing that. So let's how about this second set?
So the second set was, like I mentioned earlier, a little different. Stealing Time from the Faulty Plan started it up, which was a good standard version, and we're hoping something really strong would come in the two hole. But instead, they played Backwards on the Number Line, which hasn't played yet this tour, and I think everyone kind of knew that it would be coming. And again, it was a very standard version. And one of the things, I mean, when we talk about this, you know, there's some songs in here that there's a lot of ballads in the second set, and there's a lot of slower songs. And one thing that I think is important to know is, in my opinion, is that none of the songs themselves are bad. You know, if you, you know, that makes it so it's okay, because there's usually other stuff around there to fill the gaps. It's just that it just seemed to keep coming in this set. On the Number Line,
if you want a little more maintenance of energy, perhaps.
Yeah, by about the middle of the second set, things got it was a weird vibe in the room at that point. But after Backwards on the Number Line came Life Boy, which again was a huge bust out from I think late 2011.
Yeah,
and it was played again, just in my opinion, perfectly. Like they hit all the notes, hit all the changes, everything sounded really good. And then Meet Sick, which is another short version of Meet Sick, and then we got The Line, which again hadn't been played yet this tour, but we got both lines, which is always good for a set. And then Tide Turns off Big Boat, which I think that was the point where I felt like everything kind of deflated. Like, all right, we're through the third quarter, we're going to the fourth quarter, and we got another ballady song. And maybe, you know, this would be an extended taste jam, like back in like 1998, but it didn't happen.
No, but it was a solid enough taste. I think the real deficit is that at this point in the show, you're looking for what are they going to jam? Where's the thing that we're going to walk out of here raving about? And
so a standard
good taste doesn't necessarily fit that bill. But taken on its own, I think people will, and I think that goes for a lot of the tracks in the show. Taken on their own, people will go, oh yeah, it's not bad. But combined as a whole, it's not getting to what people are looking for. Sorry.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. That's 100% accurate in my book. I mean, the taste was a very good version of taste. I was looking hopefully for something more at that point.
Right.
Just because they're losing us. After that came Friday, which I actually love the song Friday. I last heard it at Coventry the last time it was played way back in 2004. And I love the sentiment in that song. I love the yearning in that song. It was kind of a weird placement being in the middle of the second set again, but again, it was played really well. They hadn't played it in 12 years and it sounded really good.
So is Trey just looking forward to Vegas? And
We were kind of talking about that after the show. Like, was Trey just like emotional because he played a lot of his ballads because he was close to his childhood home, even though I don't think he lived in Fort Worth for that long?
No.
Or was he? Are they just, you know, holding off for Vegas? That, you know, right, we got this big run coming up. Let's take the second set nice and easy, and you know, keep it low energy. There's some debating back and forth on that.
Yeah. And Matt,
man's going to do what the man's going to do.
Yeah, Matt, how was your overall trip? I mean, do you feel full of fish and full of, you know, did it do what you needed it to do for you?
Yeah, and it did. I mean, the first night was really the second set, fourth quarter was, I always wanted it that way. And Piper, I thought were strong choices. I mean, that's the thing with me, at least. I mean, I try to say on the positive side of things, anyone who follows me on Twitter kind of sees that I don't try to get into too big of negativity pushes. You know, even for the show last night, it was a fish show. Like, it's, you know, there's good shows and bad shows. There's better shows and worse shows. But I mean, I would still rather see fish over pretty much any other band. And maybe that's just a like naivety on my part or something where I'm not, you know, expanding my horizons enough. But, you know, an average fish show is better than most other good shows, in my opinion. So I'm happy I won. I mean, like, I'm not upset. I'm not, you know, saying I'm never going to another show again and, you know, throwing away my computer. But.
Yeah. Well, we're canceling the podcast after this episode right here.
So
yeah, that's, I can tell this is going pretty bad.
No, not you. It's the show. It's the show, definitely.
So what? No. One thing I wanted to ask you guys, just I was flipping through the set list as you guys were talking about the Big Boat tracks, and surprisingly in Alpharetta 2 there was not a single Big Boat track, which I didn't realize until looking back at the set list. But every other show had, like, you know, the most songs came from Big Boat. And Rob Mitchum's review yesterday of the first night I thought was great, because he's a great writer about music, and he's, you know, articulate and sort of has his jaded vetness as well. And the way he referred to it is that, like, you know, they're like quote unquote, you know, promoting a new album. And I don't know, it's just like, it's so hard for me to imagine that that's really how they feel about it. I feel like they're just playing their new music that they're excited about. But I thought that was just, it was something I've been thinking about, because that's just not how I think about it. What about you guys?
Matt, you're the guest. You should definitely take this first. Sorry.
So it's interesting, because I was thinking about this when Big Boat came out, that, I mean, when Fuego came out, right, Fuego was pretty much debuted in semi-polished state, right, at Halloween, and then they changed some of the track listing and changed some of the stuff up. So I thought that this was, like, the first time where they were debuting songs that were on an album that really weren't, people hadn't heard yet before. So I did kind of feel and agree with Rob's point when I read that yesterday, that, you know, they have to promote this new material, because they have a new album out that no one, that people haven't heard these songs before live. You know, when the way they did Joy, which everything debuted really early in 2009, and then the album came out after that, I believe. I can't remember the exact dates. And then for Fuego, it was the same thing, right? Like, everything debuted and then the album came out. So this is kind of inverted for them, the way they've done the last couple albums. So I think that it's interesting to hear that, you know, they need to get, it's interesting to hear where they play some of these songs, because we don't have a frame of reference that exists for a lot of these, as opposed to some of the other debuts that they've had to done in the past.
Yeah.
And I tend to agree with pretty much all of that. My thought is that it's probably more what you're saying, RJ, than the notion of promoting the album. But I'm sure that there's an element of that as well. I'm not sure that, you know, any of the pictures that I really listen to, you know, get of this band as individuals and how these four guys operate really puts them as, you know, the great business minds. You think, well, let's go move some units today. We're gonna play Waking Up Dead, so people will go buy that new record. But at the same time, there's you know, they're not oblivious to the notion. But yeah, I think they're really excited about this new music, and they want us to hear it live for the first time, or hear it live as contrast to the record. So they always do this, even if the songs came out first. You know, they flog the new songs, and you know, I'm okay with it. Now that we've kind of talked about the whole record, whole show, unless you have extended thoughts on Show of Life.
Not particularly.
do you, you know, we kind of pre-gamed on this a little about, you know, what highlight you might would single out that we could play for folks after, if you been able to come to a conclusion after discussing it a little more.
I think the Waking Up Dead, like we mentioned, had that really solid breakdown. And I guess there's something else to talk about Waking Up Dead real quick too, sure. For those of you who haven't seen it live yet. So obviously there's a lot of talk about the LED screens that Chris Crota has now. Mm-hmm. Waking Up Dead, especially during that whole like extended second half of the song, I felt like the screens were off, and they had these red and white swirly lights that were going on, kind of like the old, like the way that Chris used to do his lights more frequently. And that was insanely intense and awesome. And it really made me like yearn back for the days when, you know, it was just the simpler light setup, let's say, without the screens. The screens were cool. For the back half of the second set, I actually was able to, I got off the pit and went to find a seat and sit down for a little bit and see the entire screen setup from where I was sitting. And that was actually really cool to watch. But the lights of Waking Up Dead, I thought were really awesome. So I wanted to try to give people that hope. You see it in Vegas, that'll be really good.
Cool.
I would say that. I mean, that and the foam, I think, were my two highlights, just because foam was the third smallest. Yeah. Was the third biggest bust out of the night, because there are two larger bust outs, but the foam, I think, was the one that was the most fun.
I think it was possibly the most important, and we could probably do a whole show on why. So we'll leave it at that. All right. Well, Matt, I know you've got probably travel after, you know, later today, and RJ and I probably have to get to work. But we want to thank you for coming on and talking about the show, and hope you had a good couple of days. Everybody, we're going to leave you guys with some a little bit of Waking Up Dead, and want to thank you for tuning in.
Keep on rocking.
Is upside down, my head hangs off the bed. Say I'm just a pair of lungs connected by a thread. I'm presuming. Yeah, choice. My soul got sucked out in the ether just about.